And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. Getting into the week here, a lot of stuff to talk about today. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. Couple of quick program notes. Tomorrow in our third hour, we're going to have Don Wiskin of Extendivite talking about his wonderful product. Claire and I both use it. It does seem to be making a positive difference. And then on the 21st, Donald Jeffries, author of the book Survival of the Richest, will be our third hour guest. And of course, Friday in our third hour, the lovely Lady Claire will be joining us. Well, it's election day in Alabama, and the voters are heading to the polls in what is turning out to be a very contentious race. And it's kind of interesting. There's been a new development in this court case to preserve the voting records. Now, remember, this all started when the state of Alabama declared, because this was a special election, the normal rules for preservation of the votes, the actual scans of the ballots, wouldn't apply in this case. So some voting accuracy activists, if you will, went to court, and they got a court order saying all election records must be preserved if there's a suspicion of fraud, which given last year's election is a very reasonable suspicion. Then at the last second, the Alabama State Supreme Court stayed the Montgomery County Circuit Court's order directing Alabama election officials to preserve the digital ballot images. That basically ends it. There isn't enough time to go back to court or to federal court to try and reverse this. Basically, it means that once the election is over and they announce a winner, the records can be erased, and that will be the end of any potential challenges. Oddly enough, the Democrats are claiming that the decision by the Alabama Supreme Court proves that the Republicans are going to try and steal the election, even though it was Republicans that were behind the initial lawsuit to make sure the voting records were being preserved. Now, as you know, all through the smear job on Roy Moore with all the sexual allegations, which have now been discredited, he was leading in the polls. And all of a sudden yesterday, Fox News comes out with a poll saying that Doug Jones is 10 points ahead. Wow, what a sudden come from behind victory this is indicating. Frank Lutz actually told Neil Cavuto that he doesn't trust the Fox News poll. And we're probably, there's good reason to do that. Remember all the polls last year from all of the corporate media? Hillary's going to win 95%. She's way ahead. So we'll see what's going to happen. But I do think the Democrats are going to try and steal this one because they're desperate to take control of Congress next year. They're desperate to block Trump from this point on. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a phone call. Tony in Puerto Rico, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, aloha, Mike. Yeah, I have a quick question, Mike. I was watching a documentary yesterday on Timothy Leary. He mentioned that JFK used to drop acid with Mary Pynchon Meyer. My question is, was that true, and did that change his perception of, you know, of the world in regards to peace?
I really don't know if that was true or not, but I think there's a lot of things that can change your perception of the world, and it doesn't have to be an illicit drug. Certainly what I went through over the Vince Foster murder and the consequences of trying to go public on that, certainly that changed my view of the world. And there weren't any narcotics involved with that. And yes, before you start writing on in, I understand LSD technically isn't a narcotic.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you. We're going to let you go. Getting on back to the Middle East, this brouhaha over Jerusalem is not showing any signs of slowing down. We're seeing these articles all over the place. And by the way, there are so many of them, I can't include them all in the talking points. But coming out of Gulf News, they're basically saying that because of what Donald Trump just did, the entire U.S. Middle East political framework has collapsed. Obviously, the Palestinian National Authority is in a very tough spot, but it's just causing chaos all across the Middle East and huge amounts of anger. And basically, Trump has ended the peace process, despite Nikki Haley's assurances to the contrary at the United Nations, basically has killed the two-state solution, And more importantly, the U.S. government has lost all credibility as an impartial peace broker in the Middle East between Israel and its neighbors. Netanyahu's out there joking about two-state solution. Where do you want to send the Palestinians? Costa Rica? So he's starting to gloat. It may be premature, but he's starting to gloat here. Trump's Jerusalem bid creates new tensions in the Middle East. This is coming from Iran's Rouhani. And he's basically denounced Trump's announcement as incorrect and illegal to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Because under the original United Nations partition plan, Jerusalem is a city that is supposed to be shared among the major religions. It doesn't belong to Israel. Doesn't belong to anybody. It's an international city. And in point of fact, the United Nations has repeatedly passed resolutions reminding Israel that Jerusalem does not belong to them, other than that one quarter section, and reminding them that any actions by Israel to seize the city as their capital are illegal under international law. But of course, Israel's attitude is, you know, we're above the law. And Israel, of course, holds the world's record for most resolutions passed against it by the United Nations, which is, of course, why Nikki Haley is up there saying the UN is so unfair. They're so unfair. No, what's causing all of this is not the United Nations, but the actions of Israel's government. We're talking about a few individuals in positions of power who abuse that power and feel they're above international law. And Nikki Haley's out there trying to stop the anti-Israel resolutions by saying you're not being fair. That's like a cop pulling Nikki Haley over in the car for speeding. And Nikki Haley saying, you're only giving me a ticket because you hate me. You're being unfair. I mean, that's how ridiculous all of this gets. We're going to do a shout out now to our honor affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Now, here is where things are getting tense. We already know that people are starting to die over there in the protests and the violence, and Israel's bombing Gaza again. And so apparently the commanders of the Al-Qassam Brigades, which is the armed wing of Hamas, and also the Islamic Jihad Brigades in Gaza, the Iranian general stressed that forces in the Middle East are ready to unite to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Because we know that ultimately Israel wants to tear down the Muslim holy sites and put up their third slash fourth temple, even though it's not exactly in the right location. So this is building to a new regional Mideast war here. Another article out of Desert Peace, Trump's decision will only lead to more deaths. Yes, mostly Palestinian deaths, but still deaths. Now here's where it gets interesting. Tunisia, specifically a Tunisian labor union, has decided they're going to boycott all U.S. ships docking at a seaport in the country's southern region of Sfax, following Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And that means any ships arriving from the United States will not be unloaded. That's going to have a ripple effect into the economy of those shipping lines and the companies that were trying to ship goods to Tunisia for sale. Now, we're still hearing that Arab leaders are discussing and planning a major response to Trump's statement on Jerusalem, even as they continue to insist that Trump's statement does not alter the legal status of Jerusalem at all. It was an empty symbolic gesture, which has set the entire region on fire. And I suspect that their response will be economic. They're already boycotting the visiting U.S. vice president. And they're basically saying this was a very serious affront to the Muslim world by Donald Trump, and it requires a response of equal severity. Putin is out there saying the Jerusalem move may end the peace process. I think that's a given. Israel never wanted a peace process. Israel never wanted a two-state solution. Israel wants it all. Now, the European Union is once again reminding Netanyahu that they have rejected Donald Trump's statement on Jerusalem. And the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking that Netanyahu thought this was going to go down the same way as the founding of Israel itself. because after the Zionists went on in and they grabbed a chunk of Palestine and they declared themselves the nation of Israel, U.S. President Harry S. Truman signed a letter recognizing the state of Israel. Now, the original letter said the Jewish state, and Truman actually crossed that out and said state of Israel. It's a minor footnote to what's going on. But as soon as Truman had done that, the rest of the world's nations hopped on board and said, well, if the United States is recognizing the government of Israel, we will as well. And I think Netanyahu was really expecting the same thing was going to happen now. Trump would say Israel is the capital of Jerusalem, and everybody else would nod and say, yeah, okay, sure, fine. The U.S. says so. And I think it may be a mark of the decline of the United States in prestige around the world that that did not happen. Now, apparently in Jordan and Egypt, in a symbolic gesture, they're renaming the streets around the U.S. embassies. They're renaming them Al-Quds to send a subtle message about how they feel about this. Meanwhile, in Jerusalem, Palestinian protesters barred a Bahraini delegation visiting Israel from entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So tensions are running very, very high. Iran's defense minister, General Amir Hatami, has said that this decision by Donald Trump is actually going to accelerate the eventual destruction of Israel, and it's going to unite all Muslims across the region. And we're definitely seeing that happen. And apparently the response to this is spreading up in Sweden. Firebombs have been hurled at Jewish sites. Of course, it's being denounced as anti-Semitism, and it's got no connection whatsoever to Trump and Jerusalem. It's just more of that Jew hate out there. It's just coincidentally timed is all. Apparently a poll was just conducted. This is coming out of Desert Peace, showing that Netanyahu is the least popular Middle East leader. Now, Netanyahu, of course, is declining to comment on that, but they like to play up his successes in expanding Israel's diplomatic portfolio and cachet in the world. In other words, continuing to subvert and undermine other people's governments. So getting on down to Syria, we're getting to the end of the year, and this is when people sort of look back and they sum up what was actually accomplished. And looking back over the last year, Syrian government forces liberated 67,000 square kilometers of territory over the last 7 months. 1,000 localities, 78 oil and gas fields, 2 deposits of phosphate ores. All of this was being used by ISIS and Al-Qaeda. They were basically stealing Syria's oil, smuggling it across the border into Turkey, and selling it. And now they can't do that anymore, because they've lost control of it. Colonel General Surovikin added that Russian warplanes have flown 6,956 sorties, and helicopters conducted more than 7,000 sorties, killing over 32,000 militants and destroying 394 battle tanks, that's the big heavy ones, and 12,000 pieces of other equipment. Gee, I wonder where ISIS and Al-Qaeda got all that stuff. Maybe that might be part of that missing $8 trillion from the Pentagon. Now, Russia is starting to withdraw their forces from Syria. The United States insists they have to stay because ISIS and Al-Qaeda may return someday, ignoring the fact that Syria wants them to go and they have no legal right to be there. But in summation, looking back, it turns out our corporate media were completely wrong about Assad and the Islamic State, because when the U.S. stopped that whole nonsense about Assad gassing his own people and they rebranded the Syrian war as we're after ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they kept saying, well, we'll never be rid of ISIS and Al-Qaeda while Assad is in power. Assad has to go and then we can get rid of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Well, ISIS and Al-Qaeda are pretty much gone and Assad is still there. And the corporate media is trying very, very hard to not have to go back and admit that, yeah, they were wrong about that one as well. Now, apparently Donald Trump, as part of his attempt to reignite the war fever in Syria, showed a video of a Free Syrian Army commander named Omar Garba destroying a statue of the Virgin Mary as the group invaded a Syrian Christian town. Let's get all the Catholics riled up against the Muslims and give them all swords and helmets. It turns out the video was actually shot in 2013 when the Free Syrian Army was being supported by the United States of government. They were deemed a moderate. The U.S. was funding these people at the same time this video was made. Now, over at NATO, the U.S. is demanding NATO action on Russian missiles. And basically, the idea is that the U.S. believes a certain class of Russian intermediate range missile is a violation of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. Not that the U.S. government has got a great record of keeping its treaty obligations, but they're trying to make a big stink out of this, demanding NATO formulate a response. Now, Russia's position is these rockets do not meet the definitions of the weapons that were banned by the INF Treaty. Now, the upshot of it is that the U.S. government may say the treaty is now null and void, and we'll be off into yet another arms race of nuclear-tipped missiles. Meanwhile, in another sign of Russia's growing global influence, the Russian Defense Ministry is seeking to boost naval cooperation with Japan, and they're working on a draft deal. It's starting out on very small stuff like guarantees for mutual search and rescue effort. If a submarine goes down, both countries will go looking for it and try and rescue it. That's actually a plus for Japan because nobody does deep ocean exploration and salvage the way the Russians do. Absolutely amazing stuff that they've built over there. Well, you all saw the Keldysh in Titanic and Ghosts of the Abyss. It's an amazing ship. Now, South Korea just did something very, very smart. South Korea has politely asked the United States to halt all military exercises near the Korean Peninsula until after the Winter Olympics, hoping to calm things down so that North Korea will not take any provocative actions during the Olympic Games, which Seoul wants to use to showcase the country's development. Now, with the U.S. talking about not showing up and the brouhaha over Russia, I don't think the Olympics are going to get much larger an audience than the NFL currently does, but we'll see what's going to happen on that. There's actually been some developments on the Russia front on that one, but whether the U.S. will go along with that, we don't know. Whether the U.S. will use the Winter Olympics as a false flag, that's also possible. Remember the Munich massacre? And that one turned out to have been a staged false flag to demonize the Palestinians and build world sympathy for Israel. Now, we're going into a very hard, very brutal winter. It's really starting to show up all over the planet. And unfortunately, North Korea does get very harsh winters, and the current sanctions placed on North Korea could result in a lot of people really suffering. And the UN is saying the sanctions have to be modified to allow for humanitarian assistance so the North Koreans aren't freezing to death over the winter. Anyway, let's go to the phones here. Chris in Canada. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike. First time caller. Listen, I was hoping for your guidance, please. I'm going to a community organization that focuses on nutrition. They're having their annual general meeting this evening. And things have kind of gone sour there lately. And I'm wondering if it's being infiltrated by people on the supposed liberal left. And so I'm wondering what I could determine, were I to get a copy of their financials, because I want to lean on your research skills here, what must I do in order to backtrack and find out if they might have gotten any money from groups of the like of George Soros and company?
Well, are they a 501c3 nonprofit organization? Because if they are, then the records do have to be made available to the public. If it's a little ad hoc group, then short of getting a lawyer and suing, I don't know what you could do about that. But stepping on back from that, it's entirely possible for these groups to be infiltrated. It doesn't have to be by the left. It could be by corporate interest groups. Corporate espionage is big business, and infiltrating groups that might pose a threat to their business is something they do. In fact, we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show. And a good example I can think of was when Claire and I were living in Washington State, and there was a community organization that had gotten together to try and preserve the old growth forests. And they got infiltrated by these undercover, what they call grassroots lobbyists, saying, you know, those old growth forests, they're a horrible fire hazard. And we should just let Weyerhaeuser go on down and cut those trees down. And they were there. The reason I know they were there is because I'd ridden up from Los Angeles to Seattle on a plane sitting next to one of these people who just said, yeah, this is what I do for a living. So they can be infiltrated. Doesn't have to be the left. Could be somebody who feels that what you're doing is a threat to their business model, like fast food companies or processed food companies in the supermarket.
Well, I know they're not profit. I don't know the regulations in either Canada or the United States of America. But just for my own peace of mind, like I've heard you often, advise people, follow the money trail. So for my own peace of mind, I was just hoping if I were to score their financials, how I'd go about backtracking where the sources of their money, the origins of their finances.
Well, again, it depends on what records are made available to the public. You certainly don't want to go on in and try and steal those records. And again, because you're in Canada, I'm not familiar with Canadian law on this issue. You probably, if you really want to pursue this, you need to seek legal counsel in Canada.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your time, and I heard your message earlier. Wish you best to your fund drive.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. All right. Now, getting on back to the war zones, there are rumblings, possibly rumors, that North Korea may be doing a new nuclear test very soon. And again, people test their weapons. A test of a weapon is not in and of itself a provocation. But as North Korea moves forward with their missile program, and they're starting to show success, they tried to claim that last one was a failure, and I explained why it wasn't. But apparently the Pentagon is getting ready to test yet again their ICBM interceptor. And there's a little bit of a problem with it. It's not very good. In fact, it's only had 9 successful tests among the last 17. And we're talking about how the U.S. government is dusting off their ICBM interceptor now that North Korea has demonstrated an ICBM capability. And before I go into the specific details, little bit of a lesson in the terminology of long-range nuclear combat. The reason I know all of this is from many, many, many years ago when I was still doing some work for the government, but none of this is classified. Basically, planners for military operations will talk about a missile trajectory as consisting of 3 parts. The boost phase, which as the name implies, that's the period of flight while the engines are running and the missile is accelerating. Then there's the mid-course phase where it's simply following that nice predictable ballistic arc out in space. And then there's the terminal phase, which is when the warhead or warheads are guided to their eventual target. Now, most of the missile systems the U.S. has, like THAAD or Standard, are designed to deal with the terminal phase, close in. The U.S. only has 1 interceptor designed to hit an ICBM during that mid-course phase, and it's called the Ground-Based Mid-Course Defense System, and it's designed to counter missiles that are still way up, hopefully before they MIRV. Once they MIRV, your defensive problem has become much more complicated. The problem is this missile is considered the least reliable. It's a holdover from Reagan's Star Wars program, and it doesn't work very well. 9 successful tests among the 17. That means an enemy only has to fire twice as many warheads at us to get past it. That's not very encouraging and a good reason to not get into any more wars here. Okay, now, little interesting footnote showed up. As you know, a lot of people in this country are concerned over the number of dual citizens who hold top government positions and are even members of Congress. And under U.S. law, it's legal for them to do that. But interestingly enough, in Israel, dual citizens are not allowed to serve in the Knesset, their version of the Congress. It's Israeli only. They don't want to run the risk that somebody has a loyalty that's divided someplace else. A very smart thing to do. But of course, if in this country you suggest that we should have an Americans-only policy in Congress, you're denounced as an anti-Semite. Now, while we're talking about the corporate media and their rather shameful record over the last couple of months, several years, decades, if you will, apparently over in Great Britain, the Times newspaper is attacking activists who are trying to sue on behalf of the victims of the Grenfell Tower disaster. And the spin they're putting on this is that they don't want to talk about the substandard plastic cladding that made it a fire trap. They don't want to talk about the absence of sprinkler systems. They don't want to talk about any of that stuff. They're attacking the activists, saying that they're working with Russia to incite class warfare in Great Britain. So if you're upset about Grenfell Tower, you must be a Russian asset. Now, that's the shark. Actually, several sharks. But that's literally how they're trying to duck responsibility for the fact that it was the local government that allowed these substandard housing units to be built. And people died because of it. And people who survived are understandably upset. And so the Times turns around and says, well, the only reason you're upset is you're working for the Kremlin. Now then, turning to the domestic scene, Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, is starting to crank up the heat on the Uranium One investigation. Given the zero coverage of Uranium One we're seeing in the corporate media, you may be forgiven for being surprised that there actually is one. But there is one. And Senator Barrasso is demanding documents from the Energy Department and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And he wants to find out if the Obama administration deliberately misled the Congress about Uranium One being allowed to export yellow cake uranium out of the United States after the company was acquired by Russia. So they're making progress on that one. Now, for those of you who don't remember, yellow cake uranium was also a big deal in the attempt to stir up the war against Iraq. And there was a claim that Iraq was importing yellow cake uranium from Niger, which was ridiculous because Iraq has plenty of natural uranium inside their own borders. They don't need to import it. The reason it was claimed they were importing it was to lay a paper trail to say, well, since Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear power plant, the only reason they could be importing uranium is they're building bombs. And of course, it turned out the documents were forged. And there was a big stink there, which led to the outing of Valerie Plame and all kinds of things with that. The reason it's called yellow cake is it is a very bright, pretty yellow. And as a matter of fact, before it was discovered that certain materials are radioactive and hazardous, uranium oxide was actually used as a pigment for paints, for ceramics. And as a matter of fact, you can still find them in antique stores. And of course, if you hold them up to a radiation meter, you will get a reading from those. Now, former Fox News host Bill O'Reilly is saying that given the assumed perceived success of the sexual smears against Judge Roy Moore, that Democrats are getting ready to try and do the same thing to Donald Trump starting next month, with an idea of just piling on so many sexual assault stories as to undermine his chances for success at re-election in 2020. I have to be brutally honest, even though I supported Trump in the last election, I don't think he's got a snowball's chance in the dark regions of being re-elected, because he has basically betrayed his supporters. But somebody seems afraid that he could actually win a re-election, and they're playing very, very dirty, which tells us who it is. It's almost like Hillary Clinton's defeat in last year's election turned on the valve, like Hillary Clinton's defeat turned on the valve of sexual assault allegations as a political tool. We certainly saw it with Roy Moore, and now it's backflashing all over the place. And I got to tell you, it does remind me a lot of the rape hysteria during the 1990s. And that's why I'm not emphasizing these anymore. I've hit burnout. But Bill O'Reilly is saying there's going to be a massive campaign of finding women who are going to come on out and say that Donald Trump painted numbers all over their body or something like that. And again, to me, this tells me that Hillary's going to run in 2020. Now, over in San Francisco earlier today, their mayor, Ed Lee, who was the city's first Asian American mayor, passed away very suddenly. Apparently, he was in his office and he suffered a coronary. He was 65 years old. And he was basically appointed to serve as mayor when the remainder of Gavin Newsom's term, because he wasn't able to complete that as well. So apparently the Board of Supervisors President London Breed is now acting mayor of San Francisco, effective immediately. And Breed becomes San Francisco's first female African-American mayor in any capacity. Now let's talk about the economy. Let's talk about globalization. And I think this next story illustrates that the bankers are most assuredly not concerned with the health of the country, the people. They just want what they want. They want to grab stuff. So apparently a year ago, Greece was forced to privatize one of their largest ports, the port of Piraeus. And this was a major source of revenue for the Greek government that they could use to retire their debt. But they were forced to privatize it, turn it over. It's now in the hands of the Chinese shipping company, COSCO, which means all those port fees are not being spent to retire Greece's debt. They're just being used to enrich a corporation. And that seems to be a consistent pattern with all of this austerity. Take away the assets that might actually allow a country to pay its way out of the debt in order to make that debt slavery permanent. Because that's what private central banking is. It is a system of enslavement. It enslaves you to a sense of obligation to a debt that is manufactured for you. And it is a trap. Once you get stuck with private central banking, you can never get out unless you have a strong president like an Andrew Jackson who just pulls the plug on it and is willing to risk dying for it. Getting on back to Russia and its growing influence across the globe, Russia and Egypt have just signed an agreement for Russia to build a nuclear power plant in Egypt. Russia extended a loan to Egypt to cover the cost of construction. And so a spokesman for Rosatom said the plant, this will be Egypt's first, will be built in Daba'a in the north of the country, will be completed by 2022. And it will involve the building of a third-generation plant with four reactors. Well, that's going to make Israel very, very nervous. They're going to start screaming that Egypt is building bombs in the basement, because that's what they used as an excuse to destroy Iraq's nuclear power plant. Israel projects a lot on that issue. Israel has a bomb factory under their reactor at Dimona. Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle on it. Now that the story is out, Israeli TV actually did a documentary about it. But you're still not allowed to talk about it in the United States of America, or you're just being a Jew-hating anti-Semite. Now, they're still going around and around with the GOP tax plan. A lot of things, they're still trying to slip in some new stuff. They keep saying they're going to have a vote by the end of the year. Maybe, maybe not. But there's one little change they put on in there that is going to impact teachers. Now, if you're a teacher and you understand how school budgets are very, very tight, you can't get supplies, a lot of teachers will dip into their own pocket to get things for their students. And I know, because when I was teaching remedial math back in Southern California, I did it too. The materials provided by the school district didn't engage the kids, so I went out and I just created some of my own. Current tax law allows teachers to deduct part of that money. And they're going to take that deduction away. Now, that will mean an additional $2 billion in revenues to the U.S. government, but it's going to mean even less school supplies for our students. You know what I'd like to see? I would like to see a nation in which the top priority for our tax money are the schools, and anytime the Pentagon wants to buy a new bomber, they're the ones selling brownies out in front of the local supermarket. That's what I'd like to see. Another article out here about Obamacare and why it was an absolute disaster. And it has to do with the high cost of health care and the cutoff point at which the Obamacare subsidies would kick on in. And basically said that the problem is people who are just above that poverty line are being hit with the full force of those medical bills. It would have been much fairer to have a sliding scale. And one of the reasons we have very expensive health care is because it's a for-profit model. And the other part of it has to do with the deals that the insurance companies make with the medical providers, which is they demand a discount. And so what the medical providers will do is they'll raise their prices so that the discounted price paid for by the insurance company actually pays for the medical care. But if you come into the emergency room and your insurance doesn't cover you, you're out of their system, you pay that full inflated price. The United States has the most expensive medical care on earth, and it's ranked something like 32nd in quality. There was a story somebody posted at whatreallyhappened.com. A young mother of three died of multiple cancers because her doctor said, you're too young to have these cancers. There were indications, and the doctor said, nah, couldn't possibly be. Not very good. Story coming out of Sputnik News. Experts have been studying U.S. infrastructure for quite some time. As you know, there are concerns with certain dams that should have been reinforced long ago. Cracks in the bridges, deteriorated rail systems, deteriorated roads. And basically, somebody tallied it all up and said that most of the United States of America's infrastructure dates all the way back to the 1950s. It hasn't been updated. It hasn't been replaced or renovated. And that's why it's all falling apart. Because all of our money is going to war and Israel and into the private pockets of the politically corrupt. And that's another reason why this tax plan is not going to bring jobs back to the United States of America. There's nothing to work with. The infrastructure to support renewed industry isn't there. And yesterday we had that story that these ADHD drugs they're giving to school kids actually impede their academic performance. We have high school classes graduating with a large percentage of the students can't even read. So where is the skilled labor force that somebody would need to start a new business here in the United States? I think we're past the point of no return. I think we're past the point of no return. All right, let's get on over to Europe and immigration. The head of Germany's domestic intelligence agency says the number of Islamic radicals is growing and becoming increasingly difficult to keep under surveillance as recruiting efforts move underground. Now, Hans-Georg Masson said in comments released Sunday, the number of adherents of Salafist ideology rose to 10,800 from 9,700 a year ago. Salafists believe in a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, though they are not necessarily violent. Well, there's another way to be looking at these numbers. And we're following up on this story where the head of Israel's domestic intelligence agency is saying the number of Islamic radicals in Germany is growing and it's hard to keep tabs on all of them. And he says it's going underground. They've reduced street recruiting and radicalization in mosques and larger groups in favor of small conspiratorial circles, primarily on the internet. And he sees this as a challenge. Well, that may not be the entirety of what's going on. First of all, anybody who's doing this kind of recruiting on the internet, you have to wonder if maybe they're an agent provocateur trying to lure in people so that they can identify them. And anybody who was really planning something violent probably wouldn't get sucked in on that. But there is a phenomenon. There are all these migrants who have flooded into Europe, flooded into the United States, and this also affects, to a lesser degree, the illegal immigrants as well. They've left behind everything they know, everything that they grew up with, the familiar landmarks, familiar faces, familiar customs, and they're probably suffering an identity crisis, and they're looking for a new purpose in life, a new meaning, a new identity. And they made this trek across the globe with the expectation that they were going to find a good job and a new life and a new career that was going to be very fulfilling. And it didn't happen. And so we keep hearing about all these self-radicalized Islamics. And I think what's going on here is if there are no other options around them for any kind of emotional fulfillment or a feeling of self-pride, self-esteem, that they're going to basically go jihadi just so they feel like they still have a purpose in life. And I think that ought to be looked at as another aspect of the open borders policy that wasn't really thought through very clearly. Now, over in Germany, Merkel is thrashing around. She's trying desperately to avoid new elections, and she's trying to form a new coalition. And apparently she's running up head-to-head with the Social Democrats. And apparently the new slogan is GroKo, which is shorthand for the Grand Coalition. This is Merkel's proposal for a mega alliance of Merkel's conservatives and their own SPD Labor Party, and trying to basically put something together to say there's actually a functioning government. But everybody looks at it and says it doesn't matter what she does. It's going to be a minority government. The numbers just are not there. But apparently there's a lot of anger and friction within Germany's government over this issue. Now, you remember not too long ago how Catalonia started talking about becoming autonomous and independent from Spain. Well, that idea is starting to spread.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.